Why take one vacation with the family when you could take all of them? With Royal Caribbean, you don't just go to the beach. You visit a private island and race down the tallest water slide in North America. You don't just go for a road trip. You ATV and zip line through the jungle. You don't just go somewhere new. You rappel down waterfalls and discover ancient temples. Because this isn't just any vacation. This is all the vacations. Come seek the Royal Caribbean. Ships Registry, Bahamas.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
This is Sunday Skate with Scott McLaughlin, Andrew Razor Raycroft, and Bridget Prue on WEEI.
Boards, Maroon, a touch pass, two on one, Jesper Boqvist, DeBeasure, he scores! DeBrusk, eight frames for space, Carlo scores! DeBrusk, he shoots and scores! Coyle to McAvoy, Marchand to DeBrusk, and he scores! Pastrnak tips it away, Frederick scores! Goodbye, Toronto in game one!
Good morning. Welcome into Sunday Skate. Just heard the highlights of the Bruins' 5-1 win over the Maple Leafs in Game 1. Goals from Johnny Beecher, Brandon Carlo, two from Jake DeBrusk on the power play, and then Trent Frederick with that empty netter late. Terrific outing for Jeremy Swayman in net, stopping 35 of the 36 shots he faced. Physical game, Bruins brought it right off the bat. Leafs had their chances, but Swayman was there to stop it. Leafs did not get the saves they needed. Bruins just the more advantageous team. Took advantage of some Toronto mistakes, some bad penalties. We're going to get into the goalie conversation of what you do in game two. But guys, to start off the bat here on Sunday Skate with Andrew Raycroft and Bridget Prue, what were you guys' big takeaways from the game? What stood out to you from game one?
So first of all, I got there and I forgot how fun playoff hockey is, but also how not fun it is at the same time. Like you're sitting there when the Bruins are up 1-0 and then they hit three posts and you're like, well, this could go the other way real fast. But the Leafs, they didn't take advantage of that. They didn't take advantage of the 4-on-3. I guess the biggest takeaway this morning and the questions that we have going into game two are goaltending related on both teams. One, because Swayman did so well, and the other because Samsonov did so bad that you wonder what happens in game two in net for both teams. And I think we can get to it. I have a lot of takeaways, honestly, not just like one that I can stick to, but a 5-1 win that felt like a statement. And you saw the level of physicality ramp up. You saw the level of intensity ramp up on Boston's side. And that's kind of really been the question in the final stretches, you know, correcting those things, building on leads. And you saw what you needed to see to confirm visually that they can do it, and they did.
My takeaway is, are the Leafs that bad? That's my takeaway. I was so sure I was going to see so much of Mitch Marner and John Tavares and Austin Matthews and Tyler Bertuzzi. I was convinced going into last night's game that they were going to be forces and come out and really inflict themselves into this series. And I'm shocked I didn't see that. I really am. And it was so bad the other way. Now they can't do that again. Like, they can't be that bad again. I just don't believe it because they're too good of hockey players. But that has to be very concerning over there because that game, they should be up for that game much more. There was a lot of pressure on the Bruins to win that game, I felt like. That was like a freebie for the Leafs to go in there. Maybe we pull one off. We were playing with house money. And now the pressure's on them in a big way. And so my takeaway is, I get like 5 in a row this season, and now it's 13-3 in the last 3 games. Are the Leafs this bad against this team? That's my takeaway. I'm not sure.
Yeah, and also the Bruins, not only I don't think the Leafs are this bad, actually, but the Bruins defense did an incredible job. And that Lindholm-Carlo pair was outstanding. Carlo in particular had such a great game. The only defenseman that I thought could have done better in some situations was Matt Grzelcyk. But other than that, defensively, the Bruins were the better team. And Carlo just by himself was shutting people down the whole night.
Yeah, they went to that matchup often, Lindholm and Carlo, against the Austin Matthews line. And Bruins had the edge in shots on goal, shot attempts, scoring chances during those minutes. Like, that's it. It felt like every narrative going into the series, this game like totally fed into them and only increased it. Like, just the overall Bruins versus Leafs narrative of the Bruins have their number, the Leafs can't do it in the playoffs, like that narrative gets fed into. The Bruins goalie conversation gets fed into because Swayman gets the start, his first career game one start, and is excellent. So like now, no matter like what side you're on, I feel like you can plant your flag and be like, well, great, like just keep rotating. Like, you know, that's, hey, this is what works. This is the whole idea, right? Or if you're ride the hot guy, can't be any harder than Swayman is after that game. Like, the Leafs did have chances. Swayman was just there to rob them time after time. You know, Bridget, you mentioned, you know, the Bruins hitting a couple posts, and you're right. Like, that feels like the kind of thing where it's like that starts to build, and you're wondering, oh, okay, now is this going to swing to the Leafs? But then the one moment happens where that completely flips, and you're like, oh, this is going to be the Bruins' night. And that is the moment when Austin Matthews knocks down Charlie McAvoy. Swayman comes way out, really the only mistake he made all night, comes out to try to beat Austin Matthews to a loose puck. Doesn't get particularly close, and Austin Matthews has an open net and hits the post. And that was the moment to me where, like, it was still 1-0 at that time, but I'm like, that's the game. Like, that is the Leafs just not having it. That is, like, Austin Matthews not answering the bell, like, not taking advantage of a chance. And then after that, the Bruins score a minute 15 later. DeBrus sets up Carlo. Leafs start making mistakes. You have their top line, all three guys take penalties, stick infractions. Matthews, a high stick. Max Domi, a very dumb slash on Marchand off a face-off.
Did Sheldon Keefe, in his post-game press conference, because we were there for his too, mention unpromptedly some of the times how stupid the Max Domi penalty was? It was at least 6 times.
Yeah, because he called. So Matthews had an offensive zone high stick. Tyler Bertuzzi had an offensive zone high stick. He called those careless. Domi specifically, yeah, he kept singling out as undisciplined and said he crossed the line and you can't do that. So, yeah, Sheldon Keefe clearly not happy with Max Domi in particular, but I would say that whole top line.
I don't know who they're. You said it perfectly in that all of the narratives were well nourished last night. Like it, and it goes all the way to Domi being. You know, why? That's not your game. You're not that. Why are you slashing Marchand right off the opening draw? Why are you going at him right off the draw? It doesn't make any sense. It's just completely ridiculous to think that you're going to go out there on the first shift in the Garden and go after Brad Marchand on the left wing. I just don't understand what you're thinking when you come out of the locker room and what the coaches are saying to Max Domi to put him out there in that situation and have him, like, does he really think that Brad's going to go back at him on the first draw? The guy's been in the league for 15 years. He's won a Stanley Cup. He's he's as antagonistic as anybody and understands how to do it better than anyone in the league. And you're going at him on the first. It's crazy to me. It's crazy. And again, so right, like before the puck even dropped, they had lost their cool and they had lost their game. And can they get it back? That's the narrative right now. Can they get it back? Can they make an adjustment? Can Sheldon Keefe get these guys under control? Because if not, like, I can't believe it, but it could be short. Like, it could be quick if they don't figure it out.
Yeah, this morning I woke up and Max Domi was trending on Twitter, and I was like, how often does that happen that Max Domi is trending? And it was because of the, you know, the stupid stuff he did during the game. Someone tweeted, he's this year's Nazem Kadri, but with less intelligence. I mean, people were taking shots at him for, and Leafs fans rightfully should be annoyed with the way that he played in that game, because it's a way to be physical and bring your team into the fight, but there's also a way to when it's just unnecessary and puts your team at risk of, you know, having to kill off a penalty like that.
Well, and Domi's, he has had playoff success. Like, go back 2 years, he scores twice in game 7 when he's with Carolina to beat the Bruins, to knock them off. Like, he's done it against the Bruins. He had a good playoff run for Dallas last year. But it's like, yeah, something about putting that Leaf sweater on and getting into this series against Boston, it was baffling. And, like, I'm sure some of it for that top line in particular was frustration with how well they're being defended. And that's, Bridget, you mentioned, but, like, that matchup is huge. And I thought it was weird going into this. Now, this is why you can't always fully read into everything you see in practice, but if they actually went in with the Lindholm-McAvoy pairing staying together, I thought it was going to be a little weird, because if you dug into the regular season numbers, the Lindholm-Carlo pairing did face the Matthews line a lot and had a lot of success. So I thought, like, why not just keep them together and keep that matchup? And sure enough, Montgomery did that right off the drop. Like, didn't start with something else and have to go to it. That clearly was the game plan, but he was just showing something else in practice. Maybe misdirection, maybe he just wanted to see that in practice, but those two in particular did a great job in that matchup.
Well, I think with that pairing, you're going to have to, game 3, you're probably going to have to put them together a little bit more, and obviously they feel very comfortable, and they played Lindholm and Carlo a long time, that you don't have to practice them together, where maybe you need reps together with McAvoy, Lindholm, because again, you're going to have to start a lot of faceoffs in Toronto with those guys on the ice, just to make sure you get somewhat of a matchup in the defensive zones for in particular. So I think that's just a, of course, it's misdirection. You know, we're going to get a lot of misdirection here. Monty is not being as forthcoming as we would like to think that he has been or is going to be, etc. So
yeah, last night he said, "I don't know who my goalie is. I don't know who my defensemen are." Basically, I'm not going to answer the question.
Correct, and that's even more so with Toronto media. Like, you can't give a slip. Like, it just causes distraction. So, but again, to your the defense pairings, that they were rock solid. Carlo, like we said, have been so good against Toronto. It just fits his eye so perfectly, these guys, for whatever reason.
Did you like Grizzlick's game? And I'm not a Grizzlick hater. I know there's quite a big chunk, for whatever reason, of Boston fans that they're very critical of him, and I'm not one of them. But I just felt like he was getting bumped off pucks a lot. I felt like he was having some struggles in his own zone. And it wasn't necessarily all to do with, like, him making bad reads or anything like that. It was because he was being out-muscled and outworked for pucks.
Well, I mean, he's a smaller defenseman.
Exactly. But in the playoffs, it, like, I feel like it was more noticeable immediately when that was happening to him.
Yeah, no, I mean, he was with McAvoy. They moved the puck. He's going to get knocked off the puck at times. It's just part of his game. He got a shot on goal. He made a couple good plays, but you know, if he's an even and moving pucks with McAvoy, then all's good.
Yeah, I thought that pairing did get hemmed in a few times, especially against that Tavares line. Like, I thought the Tavares line got more chances than the Matthews line, and not. not that there were like a ton of great chances, but Tavares had a couple net front tips where he got position or rebound chances. But it felt like a lot of wasted zone time for the Leafs too at times. Like that they'd win a puck against Grizzlick or whatever, but then they wouldn't really turn it into much, or it'd be a savable shot for Swayman. And again, you know, I just keep going back to like when the Bruins made the couple times the Bruins made mistakes, the Leafs didn't take advantage. When the Leafs did, whether it was dumb penalties, putting them on the power play, or look at the very first goal. Edmondson and Reeves both go to Maroon to try to land a hit, and Maroon makes the pass to Boqvist, and it's an easy 2-on-1. And it's like, all right, congrats to Edmondson and Reeves. You got your hit on Maroon, and meanwhile, the puck's in the back of the net at the other end.
Yeah, and Reeves had a nasty hit on Carlo. I think it was in the first period that looked borderline like it could have been a boarding call. I get why it's a playoffs. You want to put your toughest guy in there, but there's a lot of times where you just watch it and you're like, why is Reeves the right person to go to in this situation where it feels like the negatives outweigh the positives in terms of the physicality that he brings?
He was their best line. They were the best line.
Actually, you're right. That fourth
line had an assist.
He
scored. They were good. I thought they were their best players.
That
Kampf and Reeves. And Reeves has to be in now that Bruins have Maroon. So you have to offset.
It really does feel matchup.
If Reeves isn't there, then Maroon is just going to do whatever. Talk about being a bully. So
he already was.
I think Reeves was good last night.
I think Reeves is like his minus numbers on the season are huge. Like, he's been on the ice for a lot more goals against than four. And I do think when you watch him play, like, he does take himself out of position to throw big hits a lot. And I thought maybe not a ton of that last night, but especially on that first goal, it was noticeable. One of him or Edmondson has to stay back there. And I thought Maroon's physicality, he ends up with six hits. That was a lot more purposeful. Like, I didn't feel like Maroon was chasing hits. I thought he was just taking them when they were there. And obviously, as the big one where he knocks Liljegren over the boards, that sends the Garden crowd crazy.
So he's chasing that one too, right? You guys reckon?
Yeah,
like that,
not,
that play happens a million times in a game, and that is exactly what Pat Maroon is great at.
He's not giving anything up.
Because his defense isn't a dummy like Edmondson, because he backs off and he knows Maroon's going to make a hit. That's all on Edmondson, right? Like, Reeves is going to go and run around and hit guys. That's what he's supposed to do. The other guys on the ice are supposed to back him up and play within that. Edmondson is the one at fault, in my opinion, for that play. Like, why is he going when he knows Reeves is going in for a hit? And I guarantee you, Keith and the Leafs coaches are saying, Edmondson, that guy's going to get a hit there. We have to live to fight another day and take the 2-on-2 or take the 3-on-2. And again, that's Maroon is so perfect what Maroon did last night, because he knows if he puts that guy into the boards, everyone's going to go crazy, recognizes the moment, changes momentum, crowd goes crazy, rather than just finishing him a little bit or bumping him and changing. Like, that is completely premeditated, completely recognized, and that's why he's won Stanley Cups, because he gets it in those situations.
All right, we got to get to our first break. Off and running on Sunday Skate. We are going to get into the goaltending discussion next segment. We have to. You can call in with your thoughts, 617-779-7937. Text us 37937. Bridget has you trending, and we'll be right back.
Why take one vacation with the family when you could take all of them? With Royal Caribbean, you don't just go to the beach. You visit a private island and race down the tallest water slide in North America. You don't just go for a road trip. You ATV and zip line through the jungle. You don't just go somewhere new. You rappel down waterfalls and discover ancient temples. Because this isn't just any vacation. This is all the vacations. Come seek the Royal Caribbean. Ships Registry, Bahamas.
At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
What was your reaction when you were told you were starting game one?
It's about time. I was excited. And I think we both know that Latis and I both could take the net at any time and help this team win. So we know that it's going to be an exciting series, and everyone on this team is going to pull their rope. So that's what we're looking forward to.
Welcome back to Sunday Skate. I'm Scott McLaughlin with Andrew Raycroft and Bridget Peru. That is Jeremy Swayman talking about his first career Game 1 start. Told Sportsnet after the game up in Canada that it was about time. All right, guys, let's just get right into it. Who are you, Razor, who are you starting in Game 2?
Oh, it's a tough decision, isn't it?
No, it's not. Don't even.
It is. I mean, this sets up perfect for the rotation. It does. It sets up perfectly to go back to, like, I don't know how, when you have an opportunity to go up 2-0 on this Maple Leaf team with a goalie who just played great, I don't know how you don't. But they've said rotation. We've heard rotation. Again, I just don't. And so you could do it. You could do it now. But again, it's hard coming off a 5-1 win at home with the guy playing as great as he did, first star, and taking him out. And giving Toronto the opportunity to gain momentum back. So, you did say it, like, it feeds into everything. Like but again, I think a loss feeds into it better. Don't you agree? Like, if they had a loss 5-1, then it's like, okay, Allmark's playing, and then it's a rotation.
That's an easier thing to decide, right? Like, it would have been the easier thing if Swayman lost.
Of course,
bad
and this was kind of the scenario that I've been talking about, because now we're in one. You win with him playing great and coming in, first time he started a series, the first time he's being able to take an opportunity, he said it.
Clearly
it's about time.
Up.
Clearly excited, clearly wanting this net for the last couple of years, clearly probably not wanting to give up the net for Game 2. It's just real tough. It's really tough. And so of course I'm going back to Swayman if it's me. But we'll see if the rotation gets put to the test.
Were you surprised Swayman started Game 1?
I would have been, I would have been, had it not been Toronto, a little bit, but I think that matchup played into being Swayman.
Also, you know what starting Swayman in Game 1 did? It just continued the rotation.
Rotation.
Allmark got the last game of the regular season. Just keep the rotation going. Swayman Game 1.
It does also, you can now it's been Swayman. The last few years, as we just heard, was Allmark. Now it sets up a little differently. All right, let's see what this does. And now you can envision Allmark coming in and being great at some point, right? Like, I feel like I will see him be great whenever he gets his opportunity. And in the meantime, you roll a sway.
I think Swayman has the right personality and mindset to handle situations like this. Like, just watching how calm he was at different points in that game, the moment never seemed too big for him. Obviously, it was a first for him starting a series, but he's one of those goalies who just can block out the noise. It seems like easier than maybe some other people can. And to answer your question, Scott, I've been pro rotation. I actually kind of.
Don't waver.
Well, stay with it.
You gotta stay with it.
In a way, I'd be okay with either guy starting.
No. But you gotta pick.
Yep. Can't do that. You can't. This is what we said 2 weeks ago. I said you're not allowed to do this. You're gonna have to lean into it or don't, because it doesn't count.
I'm okay if they go to Allmark, but I like Swayman's game so much that it's hard for me to like sit here and genuinely say I want to see Allmark in Game 2. Like, I think, and first of all, I'm also someone who believes that you earn your next start, and he earned it. Like, you just can't take it away. I don't know. I'll be happy either way because I want to see the rotation, but I think Swayman, it's this hypothetical situation that you talked about that we've gone over where somebody does so well that the decision almost, like, you question if you're going to go back to Allmark or not.
I'm not wavering.
Good. Thank you. I'm glad you're not wavering.
I've been pro rotation for a year and a half. I'm not changing now.
Yep.
Like, this is the whole point. I expect both goalies to play great. Like, that's generally what they do. So now one plays great, and I'm going to go away from the rotation that I've wanted to see that has worked so well in the regular season. Like, no, because you know what? Now if Allmark plays great in game two, then it's great. Then you just keep it going. What I want to keep going until it doesn't work is the rotation.
Until it doesn't work.
Well, of course, once anything doesn't work in the playoffs, you have to change. Like, if your power play doesn't work, you have to change. If your top two lines aren't working, you have to change. So that goes for anything. But I think the rotation has worked so well the last 2 years. Last year, they went away from it in the playoffs. It didn't work out. I understand it's different now because last year was Allmark you tried to ride. This year, if you keep starting Swayman, it's a different guy. So they're not the same. But I really genuinely do think that both goalies are better because of the rotation, because of the rest that they get, because they're used to it, because this is what they've done for 2 years. And so I would go to Allmark game two. And if he plays great, then I keep it going, go to Swayman game three, Allmark game four. If Allmark stinks in game two, fine. I'm done with it. Throw it out, ride Swayman until he gives you a reason not to. But no, for game two, I'm sticking to my guns here. I want to see the rotation. I think it would be the best decision for them to make. I understand it would be tough. I understand it's, you know, hard to go away from a guy after that kind of start. It's hard to go away from Swayman when he clearly Toronto cannot figure him out this year. That also plays into this. Like, that there is that.
Yeah, that's.
There is sort of like those mental gymnastics of like Toronto shooters now have three straight games going back to early March where they have not been able to beat him, where he's just shut them down. So I get all that, but no, I'm still pro rotation.
So let me just push back a little bit, because this is the issue right here. Okay, is that when you say, well, I want to see the rotation here, but if Allmark's bad next game and Swayman's great in three, then throw the rotation out. So we didn't even get through two full rotations, and we'll be clamoring for one goaltender. Not even. So again, this is what I was saying for the past 8 weeks, everybody. This is what I was saying, and this is exactly where it goes. And you can't give away games, guys. That's my thing. You cannot give away game two, hoping that Allmark's good. All I'm saying is,
I'm not hoping Allmark's good. I'm banking on him being good because he's been great since the All-Star break.
I think he'll be great whenever he goes in, but why wouldn't you? You just gave all the reasons. So they're in their heads. What if Allmark goes in and Matthews gets going? Because now all of a sudden, now he scores three goals again because he saw a guy, he's not in his head. He goes back to Swayman. He's feeling. My point is, why not go back to Swayman again? Play until you lose. Why don't we? Maybe we do the play until we lose game. And it kind of sets up for that now. Let's say he wins game two, loses game three. Now you go to Allmark game four. Like, you can do it a bunch, and you're up 3-0, or you're up 2-1, you're up 2-0. All I'm saying is you can't. If you're a rotation guy, you have to be a rotation guy for at least two rounds, all the way to game five. You can't change in game four. That's all I'm saying. That, because then it's not a rotation.
I disagree. Like, I think you can go if Allmark. Now listen, if you lose game two, but Allmark's really good, then yeah, I'm still sticking with it. But no, okay.
Let's play that scenario. If he's great and Swayman wins game three, so now he's 2-0, Linus loses 2-1 in overtime. Are you going back to Linus in game four?
Yeah, if he was good in game two, yeah.
All right.
Because I'm not putting that loss on him.
Okay, so then he loses in overtime, plays great again. He loses 1-0. Now he's 0-2, Swayman's 2-0. Swayman wins game five. Now he's 3-0.
Too many games down the road, Razor.
Who's playing game six? You sticking to your rotation?
Okay, but I can do the same thing the other way,
yeah,
though.
Yeah, I know.
Let's
it's
say,
a hypothetical
all right,
game.
So you said Swayman until he loses. What if game two is 5-4 and he gave up a couple soft goals?
I'm playing him in game three. There's no like hypothetical. No, I'm sticking with the guy who's winning 100%. If he wins 10-9 next game, I'm playing him in game three. 100%.
And I want to be clear about my position. I think that the rotation can be effective, but when I was thinking about it this morning, because, like, I don't know, in my other job, I'm supposed to give, like, you know, I'm an analyst. I'm supposed to give what I
take the emotion out of it?
Yeah, it's supposed to take the emotion out of it. It's supposed to give my honest, you know, thoughts on something. And I thought Swayman played too well to take him out. And I'd be happy with either goalie in game two. I'm comfortable with both of them. But when I think about it logically, I feel like because of the specific situation with Toronto that they're in, how well he's played against Toronto, how he is kind of in their head, it seems like a little bit, and he's playing very, very confidently. I just feel like you don't want to take the momentum that he has away from him, because then it takes the momentum away from the team a little bit. And I just, in this very specific situation, because I'm not talking about hypotheticals, I'm talking about like what we're actually looking at for this next game, it just makes sense to me. I don't know why, but just it was such a huge win. It was such a great game that my thoughts on it, I'm basing it off of that. Not, I don't think that the goalie rotation would be an issue, but I want to see Swayman in game two.
Linus Allmark was really good in game one last year.
He was. And he was great in games three and four, too. They were up 3-1.
So
I think we would all take four games from Swayman with him being up 3-1 in the next, you know, at when they're coming back to Boston.
Then what if he starts to slide in five and six like Allmark did last year?
You just
year.
Need to have a quicker trigger to make the change, really. That's what I said right along.
And then Allmark comes in cold, having not played in 2 weeks. See, this is why I'm rotation. Like, I think they're both at their best when they're just going back and forth, staying fresh, both on top of their games. You don't have to worry about either one getting worn down. They both play.
Just stick with it. That's all I'm asking. Yeah. Stick with your rotation all the way through this series. Every other game. That's what the rotation is.
And this is why it's so easy to second guess. Because
either way, again, like it's really easy to say, when you have two really good goals, it's going to be easy to second guess. Either way, the second things start to go sideways.
Who's Toronto playing in game two? Let's switch it.
I mean, if I were them, I would go Wall. But
me too.
I don't know who.
I would go Wall.
You know,
So the reason why I'm going back to Samsonov is because you're on the road still. Hope he plays better. Hope, like, he wasn't bad either. Like, he just kind of got beat with stuff. And then you don't ruin Wall. You keep Wall, play Samsonov. If they do lose, now Wall's the guy. He's the hero. Going back home feels great. If you go to Wall now, I think it's too early, because if he loses and gets beat up at in the Garden, now who do you go back to in Toronto? Now, oh my God, we can't get a save from anybody. It kind of, no one gets to be the hero. So, I would expect we see both goalies go back. That would be, if I was in charge, both of those.
Yeah, I didn't think Samsonov really gave up any, like, super soft goals or anything, but if the Bruins goalies are on top of their game, like, you're going to need some extra saves from him. You know, Swayman made the stops on high-danger chances. Samsonov really didn't. Like, he got, again, they weren't soft, but it's a Stanley Cup playoffs. Like, you're going to need to stop one or two of those.
Yeah, there was some times that out in front of his own net he, and this may not completely be his fault, but he didn't control all the rebounds out in front of him. There was some second chance opportunities in close and different situations. Sometimes your defensemen are kind of in your way and you think they're going to handle the puck, but I don't know, in my mind he didn't play well enough to keep the net.
Yeah, I mean, Swayman gave up some rebounds too, but I, you know, not that I'm an expert at analyzing goaltending play like Razor is, but I thought the way Swayman recovered on rebound chances was outstanding. Like, he kept getting square to them again, even if it was kind of left in a juicy area.
Yeah, and like, of course, the Bruins are just better in front of them, too. You know, not all high-danger chances created equally. There was no odd-man rushes. Everything was in the zone. Those little rebound plays were in the first where he kicks his right pad. Like, that's easier read than that two-on-one the other way. So, again, the Bruins did a great job, and you mentioned it, with those kind of like those longer shifts in their zone where plays were on the outside the whole time, or a shot that was savable. Like, they did a really nice job bending but not breaking.
All right, let's go to the phones here. I'm going to start with John and Lynn, who has some thoughts on the goaltending. What's up, John?
Hey guys, how's it going?
Good, how are you?
Good, good. I just had a question that I haven't heard posed anywhere. If they actually did try to trade Allmark at the deadline, shouldn't that have sent a little message that Swayman is their guy going forward? And why wouldn't they have given him 2 out of 3 or 3 out of 4 games the rest of the season to prepare him to be the man in the playoffs?
Yeah, thanks, John. It's a good question. I think the fact that they were, you know, had Allmark on the trade block, reportedly had a deal that was relatively close before he exercised his no movement clause. To me, it indicates, yeah, they would have been okay turning it over to Swayman, making his net, his team, his playoff run. But you end up keeping Allmark, so now it's a different calculus, right? Like, you can't just like, oh, well, we were going to turn it over to Swayman anyway, so let's just do that. Well, now you still have your two goalies, so you have to decide, okay, what's best while we still have the two goalies? And this is why I think they should rotate, and I actually think they will, is because Montgomery, I asked him up in Montreal, can you rotate all the way to the end of the regular season and then ride one guy? And he said, I'm paraphrasing a little, but they learned last year that it's hard to do that, that it's hard to rotate all season and then expect one guy to carry the load. They had plenty of chances to give someone three or four straight starts down the stretch. They could have done that, and they never did. So that indicates to me that their conversations were, let's keep rotating until we have a reason not to. And in my opinion, you still don't have a reason not to keep rotating.
Well, and you won't until you see both of them at some point in the series. Like, that's when you start to say, okay, you know, this guy can't handle it as much as the other one. So that's the only time that you really start to think it's not going to work, right?
And then to that question, and it's the last month and a half of both the last two seasons have been almost identical, flipped, but mirror images of themselves, is the guy that they might have wanted to go to, the other guy was playing better than down the stretch. And it was impossible to go three out of four. I think they probably wanted to. I think they probably had a plan in place to have Allmark play three of four. But Swayman was rattling shutouts off at the end of last season. This season, after the deadline, Linus goes on a run and probably deserved to play two or three in a row, but it was actually Swayman they wanted to start. So now you have to go every other because you can't keep Allmark in the dark because he's playing so great. And that's not, you know, the way you've decided to work things. So I think that's that to that question. I think we didn't see someone to play three or four in a row because they just, the other guy was just playing too well. That they couldn't do that, and there was no slip up from the guy that they didn't expect to start. That would be my guess, is that they wanted to, they were hoping to get a chance to do that, but the goalies just didn't allow that to happen.
And he's right, they did absolutely tip or show their hand when they were willing to trade Olmark, that they were comfortable with.
Allegedly,
yes.
OJ, allegedly.
It seemed like there was some decent reporting on it, but yes, we're not 100% sure how that went down, but they clearly were comfortable and with just having Swayman, and I think that in particular against Toronto, it makes sense.
Yeah, and it's also worth reiterating that any trade of Allmark wouldn't have been just because you feel the need to pick one goalie and get rid of the other. It would have been to upgrade other parts of the roster. They were getting NHL players. We don't know exactly who they would have been, but they're getting at least one, like, higher to middle of the roster NHL player. It wasn't going to be for prospects or picks or anything like that. So, all right, we got to catch a break here, but we see more calls up on the board. You can jump in, 617-779-7937. We will be right back on Sunday Skate.
You kind of opened the door for me there. I was going to ask you in the goalie decision as the series goes forward. I don't know how much you'll tell us, but is it based on in-game performance, or is it the plan in your head and you're sticking with it? Anything you can share?
It's going to be hard to go away from Sway. You know, I mean, he played a terrific game. You win 5-1. But like we said, like, if we decide to go with Olmark, we're comfortable with it, and our team's comfortable with it, you know? I don't think it doesn't affect us in the room, whoever starts next game.
Welcome back to Sunday Skate. That's Jim Montgomery talking about the potential or the goalie decision he has to make for game two, unless it's already been made. You know, if they decided on a rotation ahead of time, he might already know. That might already be decided. But Yeah, he, you know, continues to the start of that answer, it felt like he was maybe letting us in a little more than he had. But then you get the, but we'd be comfortable with Ullmark and it wouldn't affect the team. So still covering all his bases. And we're not gonna get a definitive answer until they hit the ice for warmups again Monday night for game two.
No, it was funny when he started saying, well, it's going to be hard to go against Swayman. I was like, oh, he's going to Ullmark for sure. Like, he's just like throwing us off the scent. And then he brought in Ullmark at the end. I'm like, oh, no, he's not necessarily giving us that. Like, because for sure I thought he was sending everyone to look this way and then Allmark's going to come out. But the fact he brought Ullmark in at the end of the answer, he just made it muckier, and you can't read anything into anything he's saying.
No, now you think that it was disingenuous when he said he had no idea what he was going to do in net game two, or do you think he meant it when they got off the ice?
Oh, he knows what he's doing.
Do you think he was waiting to see what happened, though? Like, do you think he might have changed his mind, or you think that he...
What, depending on play? No, I think he was waiting to see how they played, but I'm saying as soon as that buzzer went at the end of the game and he sat down in his office before he went to talk to everyone, he knows who he wants to play for sure.
He had extra time to sit and think about it too, because the way they do post game for the playoffs, they, you know, locker room opens first, and so it was like
the coaches talk after.
Yeah,
Razor, we were there forever. We left the Garden at 1:30 a.m.
That's a disaster.
The game starts at what, like 8:20, because it takes a while to get through the pregame stuff, and then The press conferences ended at like 11:30 p.m. and it was tired. We're tired today.
It's playoffs. Don't need sleep.
Yeah, I'm on my Nesson rotation, so I'm on the opposite. So I had like two. Chief had his 9% IPAs in the box last night. And we all had to like drink. Like my head is killing me today because of that. And so
you're gonna blame Chief for that.
I had a late night too. Yeah, 100%. I am absolutely. Who makes a 9% IPA? I mean, Jesus,
they're good,
but they are good. He did a good job. Yeah.
By the way, so on the game two starter, fans pretty split. We posted a poll last night on the WEI Twitter account. Now up over 700 votes. 54.5%. Say ride Swayman for game two, 45.5% Ullmark, keep rotating.
I'm glad, because again, I would say that it was probably 55-45 rotation, right? So we've only had like five people jump ship. So again, I appreciate the non-jumping. I said this from the start too, right? Like it might be wrong. This might actually be the thing. I'm just, my whole time, And I'm not going to, certainly not wavering off of it, but I think today was a perfect example that it's hard when you wake up after a 5-1 win to rotate. That's it. So I'm glad that everyone's voting, and I'm glad people still want to see Ullmark go. And I think we'll see him.
Yeah, and just the fact that it's 55-45, it's like last year, if you had asked this last year after game one, after Ullmark wins, it would have been 75-25, 80-20. Like, I think the experience of last year turned some people into rotation people. And I think other fans have been primed all season long by Montgomery over and over and over again saying we'd be okay with it. So it feels like, at least among this fan base, it wouldn't register as, like, as crazy as I think most hockey fan bases would still consider the idea of a playoff rotation.
I think we need a poll, and we should move off of this because we have no idea. Like, we really don't know or anything. I'm just curious if people were assured of winning the first round in six games with just Swayman, would they take it? Like, I'm curious, like, do people just want to see both goalies? Do they want to see the Bruins win? Like, I'm wondering if they were told the best way to win a series is with one goalie, would they believe that? Would they agree that? Or do they want to see both guys and they want to see the hug and they just want to have their team be the rotation team? That's kind of where I'm curious, like, where it's at. And I don't think we're going to solve that right now. You have to do a huge poll for that. But I do get curious, if you were told that one of these goalies was going to win you a series and you wouldn't see the other guy play, would you be okay with that? Or do you really want to see a rotation that badly?
I would assume fans are going to take whatever's going to win. Yeah. I think the disagreement is over what helps us win the series and what helps us make a long playoff run. Like, I don't I mean, maybe there's some of that of, hey, we want to see the rotation just because it hasn't happened. Like, it's that curiosity factor. Yeah. But I think for the most part, I'm going to give – now, this has been a mistake when I've done this at times in the past, but I'm going to give fans some credit on this and think, like, people are genuinely coming from positions of this is what I think is best to win. And obviously there's differing opinions on that. There's differing opinions in this room, you know, in this poll, just across the fan base as a whole. So, but yeah, I don't think anyone's, you know, pro rotation just because, hey, let's just be different.
Yeah. I was somewhat surprised to see how close it was. I think that, like I said, I think I was expecting more people to say Swayman for game two, honestly, just based off what they saw in game one. My favorite answer was one that came from outside the box. One of our comments said, Andy Moe, that's who you should start. You
hey, Reggie Lemelin was in the building last night. He was the fan banner captain.
Yes, love he was.
It. Loved it. Seeing Reggie and waving that thing.
Brendan Bussey, I don't know. Scott had an interesting theory about Brendan Bussey.
He's a right glove. That'll really throw the Leafs off.
There you go.
I've never seen
go,
that before.
Go for the triple rotation. That'll really give it to him. Now I have no idea what to do with the triple rotation. We'll see Swayman in game four.
And neither will we. We would have no idea. We already can't handle this rotation.
All right. We got to get to another break here. But hour two of Sunday Skate coming up. Tom, Jay, still see you on the phones. Sorry we haven't gotten to you yet, but we will. After this break, we'll be right back on Sunday Skate.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
This is Sunday Skate with Scott McLaughlin, Andrew Razor Raycross, and Bridget Prue on WEEI.
Billy, in particular, with Maroon being physically engaged and also very vocal on the bench as well?
For sure. You know, I was thinking about that throughout the game. When you hear a guy like that speaking, everybody listens. Everybody takes care of what they're going to based off of his words, just from his experience and his leadership. So he's a great resource for all of us and a great leader as well.
Welcome back. Hour two of Sunday Skate with Andrew Raycroft and Bridget Prue. I'm Scott McLaughlin. Let's get to some phone calls here. We'll start with Tom in Boston. It says he's calling about Jim Montgomery. What do you got, Tom?
Two quick things real first. Your guy Brian, is he still sick of Jake DeBrusk? Is he done with him? two, the USA chants are dumb. I don't like them. And my real question is, I'm glad they're not playing the Tampa Bay Lightning because I think John Cooper would outcoach Montgomery. And I think last night Sheldon Keefe proved he can't outcoach a wet paper bag. He didn't even hold up three fingers to say penalties or whatever, like Paul Maurice did last year. So I guess that's my question. Thanks very much.
All right. Thanks, Tom.
Scott, you agree with him about the USA chant. Scott was losing his mind. He's like, this is so dumb. There's so many players from so many different countries.
I just think it's silly. Like, beyond that, beyond, like, obviously some of the Bruins' best players are from other countries and from Canada. Also, just to think, like, the energy should be focused on Bruins. Like, Bruins chance, not USA. Like, you're not watching a USA game.
No, so, I'm with you 1,000,000%.
Yeah.
1,000,000%.
It's silly.
I remember when we played Montreal and they would do it, and it was just like, what?
So yeah. to the other parts, I guess to get to the part about coaching and the matchup, doesn't it kind of look like now Tampa Bay would have been the harder matchup? Which, by the way, the Panthers and the Lightning play today at 12:30. They have that early game. That's going to be really interesting to watch. But I think that Florida might have accidentally screwed themselves by beating the Leafs at the end of the season. I think that's not an easy matchup for them. And I think that it might have worked out perfectly for the Bruins, the way that things played out on the last day.
It's I mean,
we got a ways to go. Let's not let this could be a 5-1 the other way next. Like I'm not jinx it, or like I'm not superstitious in any way, but this is far from over. The Leafs could not have played any worse.
They could not have played any worse. And they didn't have Nylander.
We've got so much hockey and to play here. This is
playoff series are all about the adjustments.
Correct.
You know, in game but also game to game. So like we'll see what the Leafs are going to do. They're not going to come out and do the exact same thing that they just did in game one, obviously. Yeah. Like, and, you know, by the way, we haven't even mentioned it yet, but huge loss for the Leafs not having William Nylander, their second leading scorer, who played every game all regular season. But because it's the playoffs, we have no idea what actually happened. But apparently something happened to either their last game or the next day. He apparently, like, woke up, not something was off, and then he doesn't practice. He's not at morning skate. He doesn't play in game one. We have no idea if he plays in game two. But that's a huge loss. So, yeah, we'll see whether it's line changes, different defense pairings. I was at the Leafs practice on Friday, and it's like they have like 11 defensemen out there. Like they have so many defensemen. It's like, you know, you'd prefer some of them be better than they are, but I'm assuming there's going to be at least a couple lineup changes over there, and you know, maybe they try to get Matthews away from Lindholm and Carlo more. Like,
well, to the caller's point about the coaching, and I think it's a great point. Keefe's got to figure it out. He has to figure it out. He cannot, if he doesn't, he got smoked in game one, and he's got to pick up his shorts and come back out and figure out a way to get his team, both with personnel and with emotion and with in-game, even pulling the, why is he pulling the goalie? Why is he pulling the goalie 4-1? Like if it's the other side, I was losing my mind, and I was happy about it in watching the game. Why is he pulling a goalie 4-1 to let Trent Frederick get his first playoff goal and feel good about himself? Made no sense at all. So Keefe's in one right now, and I agree 100% that John Cooper, Paul Maurice, and Jim Montgomery have the upper hand right now in the Atlantic Division on Sheldon Keefe. He's got to prove himself in Game 2 and Game 3 with adjustments.
Yeah, and you're still tuned into the way that Toronto fans think, because you were saying you got your group chat with all your...
Listen, I played there. I dealt with most of the media that are still there. I know how it works. My buddies all live there. They're Leaf fans that are crazy people that don't get it.
And what are they texting you about Sheldon Keefe today, yesterday?
Oh, no. It's more of their anger is at Nylander. So that leads into this.
Their anger is at Nylander?
Where is Nylander? How does Nylander not play? Why is Nylander sitting out? How do you miss a game in the Stanley Cup playoffs? Would Brad Marchand miss this game no matter what his injury is? Oh, yeah. It is.
Oh.
Fully directly at Nylander. Where did he go? How does he play the last game of the regular season and then not the first game of the Stanley Cup playoffs? I don't care if his groin's falling off. He should be out there, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Like, oh, yeah, it's directed at Nylander, and that it's a big point and a big piece of – he had 97 points, and he just doesn't play game one. He better be hurt. He better be hurt. And
well, he hasn't missed a game due to injury in 7 years.
It's crazy.
He's missed a couple games with illness, but...
So what... And what... He played the entire game the other night. What happened that he can play for 7 straight years, like you said, and not game one? So, again, something... A distraction. They are going to be all over Keefe about this afternoon in his presser. He is going to have to answer directly to Nylander. He's going to have to blow it off. But I promise you, that is a big deal there. And I can't imagine... If we don't see him in game two, holy smokes, it'll be fascinating. So that's going to be an adjustment for the Bruins to deal with a huge pushback from the Leafs, but also with their lineup personnel defensively, and I have to expect Nylander in.
I'm a little surprised by that, just because like you don't know what it is, so it's in my mind it's hard to be critical if like something could be very wrong, and sometimes it's not like a, you know,
but that
like
would be rational thinking.
Yeah, exactly. That's why I don't get it.
I know. And like, it's kind of especially harsh because he's generally been the one member of that core four that has stepped up in the playoffs. Like, usually the criticism after some of these postseason disappointments for them has been more towards Matthews, Marner, Tavares. So, you know, now if Nylander's coming into the crosshairs too, it's like, it's the guns are really aimed at everyone up there.
Like the Spider-Man.
Like now, no one's safe. Yeah.
I could go, like, this could be a whole show, is my group chat with my buddies. but poignantly at 8:44 p.m., there was a message sent, he better have a broken leg. So we didn't even get out of the first period, and that was being said from the northern regions of North America.
Oh, also, we know we're not going to get anything from Sheldon Keefe because he on Friday specifically told us that Brad Treliving, the Toronto's GM, told him not to give any injury updates on a day-to-day basis. apparently, you have to go to Timothy Liljegren to get the updates on what's going on with Nylander, because he told reporters yesterday that it's going to be tough to replace Willie, but we'll figure it out. We always find a way to have guys step up. So,
he didn't get the memo
about not saying anything.
No, and he had a weird game, too. Like, he got laid out by Maroon. He was the guy who made the diving attempt to block that pass over to Beecher that didn't work. I don't know. He's having a weird series already.
I usually like Liljegren, too, as a player. But yeah, there were a couple times in game one where it was like, oh, he's not having a fun time out there.
No.
Let's go to Jay down in North Carolina here, who has a thought on the rotation or playing Ullmark. Good morning, Jay. Do we have Jay?
No Jay.
He may have gone away, but he's on.
All right. Well, we can maybe we'll come back to Jay. We can go to Bill in New Hampshire, though.
Yeah, hi, guys. Thanks for taking my phone call.
No problem.
I think you start Ullmark and you don't look back. And the reason for it is, both goalies are outstanding. I mean, they can both steal a game and they can both, put up ducks. Even though these guys, after they win games, they have this, little love fest after the game. They're both highly, highly competitive, not just with the other teams, but with each other. And, for that reason, I think it's wise to start Ullmark. They're both really, really good problems to have. And you just don't look back. Like I said, both guys can win you a game and both guys can lose you the game. So it's kind of a flip of the coin. So go with Ullmark, call it a day. Thank you.
All right, thanks, Bill. I think we can go back to Jay here too, right on the same topic. Sorry, Jay, we had you waiting for a while there.
Not a problem. Listen, good show, folks. A damn good show. I appreciate listening to you. But it's the cliche: if it works, don't fix it. The rotation works. Ullmark deserves his chance. And as I say, they're both highly competitive. The game is won in the goal. The Stanley Cup game is won in the goal. And the Bruins have the finest tandem in the Hockey League today. But as far as the I love the way they position themselves not to play the Tampa Bay Lightning, because the Tampa Bay Lightning has won two Stanley Cups. They know what it takes to win. Good luck to the Florida Panthers. It's not going to be a pushover. And I don't really know that the Panthers will win that series. But back to you, folks. Always wanted to say that. Thanks, guys.
All right. Thanks, Jay. There you go. Two pro rotation calls.
Yeah, they're calling. I can't wait. I can't wait. I have Tampa beating Florida in seven, by the way.
I have Tampa in that series too.
I have Florida, but I think that's going to be a great series. That's going to be a slugfest.
Yeah, it's a bad matchup for the Florida Panthers, and they have to be careful taking penalties, power plays. Very interesting.
Yeah,
that's gonna play.
Yeah,
it's
you got the highest
awesome.
Penalized team versus the best power play.
Yeah. Sergachev's
back. The LTIR. I love the LTIR this season. That's like my new, like, I'm searching everybody who's been injured. I want to watch Derek Forbert play. I want to watch Sergachev play. I want to see Mark Stone play.
Mark Stone cleared to practice in full.
Love it. Oh, it's just miraculous how every year these miracles come to life.
That's going to be a great series, too. Vegas and Dallas.
Yeah, Dallas is great.
That if you're Dallas, you're like, wow, we finished as the number one seed in the West, and we get rewarded with Vegas, who went out and got Hurdle and Hanifin at the deadline, and has Stone coming off LTIR, and yeah, like
it's not an easy matchup. Plus,
no.
They're defending their title. So,
so on the topic of, you know, the Bruins ending up with what I didn't really think was much more favorable of a matchup, because I thought the Bruins would have a 5-on-5 edge over Tampa. But certainly the consensus is that the Leafs are the better matchup. Do you guys think there was any chance, anything in the Bruins' minds, those last two regular season games? I strongly believe that they were not purposely tanking. But does it creep into their minds at all that, like, hey, you know what, if this game doesn't go our way and we end up with Tampa, then, you know, that's not a bad thing.
No. I think it's hard to get up for those last couple of games. I think we saw it even with L.A. and Vegas, that, you know, like, you saw it up until the last second. They're trying to blow game, and I say that facetiously, because is that they're playing Chicago and Anaheim, and they can't win. Like, you're just looking past. It's so hard to get up for it. They got up for the Pittsburgh game, and they talked themselves into that one because of Sid and Malkin, and they just got themselves up. But then they're on the road again for another 2 days, and just couldn't muster it. So I think I've never heard a team say we want to play one team or another. I think you just know you're into one. I think you know that if you do start thinking that way, you're going to get pumped by the team that you think you want to play. I think they were very happy that they're in the playoffs, knew it was going to be hard no matter what, and just couldn't get up for the last couple of games. If they really were tanking, they wouldn't have shot Ottawa 23-2 in the third. They would have just kept going away. So I've never seen it. And you're told at a young age, but you're especially told when you get to the NHL, that you take a shift off in this league and you're going to get hurt, you're going to get injured, and you're going to get humbled one way or another. So I just don't see that happening. I'm still not convinced that it was the right matchup. I'm still not convinced that it was an easier matchup. We got a long way to go here.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, look, even if some of the Bruins' top players were like, hey, I'm just trying to get to the finish line here, guys further down the lineup are still fighting for jobs. They're fighting to be in the game one lineup. So I didn't buy that at all. I know, like, some of the shows on both stations this week, quite frankly, were almost straight up stating it as fact.
Yeah,
that, like, the Bruins
tanked
for Toronto. And it's like,
yeah, you can't do that.
That's so disconnected from reality. Like pro athletes just don't think that way.
No, and coaches don't allow you're right. Like, it was like, it's been like pronounced that it was, this is what happened, and like craziness.
All right, we got to get to a break here, but see another call up here. You can join us, 617-779-7937. Text in 37937. Thoughts on the goalies, the series going forward, the way the Bruins played. Do you think it is going to be a short series? Do you think this is going to end up being long? All that. Bridget has you trending, and we'll be right back.
Jake, for you, how good did it feel to kind of reset for the playoffs and then get started like this in game one?
Yeah, obviously it was a focus. I was excited to get this going. It felt like we were in training camp with them out of practice days. But, you know, I think that obviously I didn't like my season. It was pretty disappointing for myself. But at this point in time in the year, we have a chance to go for the ultimate goal, and that's all that really matters. And, you know, I think it's one of those things where obviously it went well tonight. You know, it's exactly what I wanted to do in that sense. But, you know, playing against these guys before, I know it's going to be a long series, and that got to keep that going. Obviously can't keep, can't keep production going the same way. But, you know, I think it's just a matter of playing the right way. And obviously reading off, you know, Marshy and CeCe, and definitely nice to capitalize, gets the confidence up. But this time of year is all about staying even keel, to be honest with you.
Jake, what goals did you set for yourself coming into this postseason?
To win.
Welcome back to Sunday Skate. I'm Scott McLaughlin with Andrew Raycroft and Bridget Prue. And you just heard both me and Bridget.
That wasn't quite the full answer from, I had to follow up because obviously, you know, he gave me the to win and I was like, no, well, like specifically you, what do you want to do? And then he gave a little bit better of an answer, but
no, but I liked that answer. I mean, we had to cut it off just because it would have been too long of a clip, but I did like it that that was the first thing he said, like asked about goals and he just says to win. yeah, we haven't really talked about DeBrusk yet, but we should. So let's do that. Because he struggled down the stretch. He had 1 point in the Bruins' last 10 games of the regular season. No, it's no secret. You need secondary scoring. You need DeBrusk to step up. He's one of those guys. You're not going to win this series if it's all Pastrnak and you're just relying on him to score. So who else is going to step up? Well, game one, it's Jake DeBrusk. And he's done it against Toronto before in the playoffs. Obviously, that was a while ago. That was very early in his career. But what a game. I mean, he sets up Carlo's goal. That's 5-on-5 to make it 2-0. Nice play on the power play to score his first goal to make it 3-0. Just wheeling through the circle and snapping a good shot past Samsonov. Some help from a Morgan Geeky screen on that one. And then his second goal, again on the power play, and he's just at the net front. And the, you know, nice play by McAvoy and Marchand to set it up. But that's exactly what you needed from him. And I think, listen, getting off to a good start is huge for everyone, obviously. But it feels like, especially for DeBrusk, like, you heard it there. You know, he wasn't happy with his regular season, nor should he have been. It was too inconsistent. The point totals weren't where he wanted in a contract year. But excellent start. You know, let's see if it continues, but perfect game one for him.
Perfect answer, perfect self-awareness in that he didn't have a good season. He knows he can make a lot of money. He can make a lot of money here over the next 3, 4, 5, 6 weeks. And I like that he leaned into that. I like that he's positive in that. And I, of course, you like it when he gets going, because every time he scores a goal, you feel, okay, now he's going to score 6 in a row. That's just kind of the streaky type player he's been. So great start. We talked a lot over in the previews. I talked a lot. That line has to find ways to score. They're going to be up against the Matthews line, and they have to, you know, play them even. And certainly to begin, they're up on them. So great start. Great job by Jake. And if he continues to bring energy, the Bruins are in a good spot.
Yeah, taking the accountability, being, you know, just being honest about his thoughts on the regular season. You see a lot of growth in him personally, in how he's handled the media from the trade request situation to now. And so in terms of how he was able to turn it around after, you know, going cold in the last stretch of the regular season, it feels like in the playoffs he always finds a way to go back to the hot side of things. And he's been good against Toronto in his career and this season as well. And his goals came from hard work that he did before he even put those in. And Montgomery after the game also said, you know, he's getting rewarded for things that he's been doing right the whole season. It does have an element of that to it, where it's not that he took the season off and was not trying, because he's doing other things away from the puck or you know, winning battles along the boards that, you know, he's not necessarily getting any points, but he's starting plays or he's making steals. And I never at one point this season thought that he just was checked out.
Yeah, I mean, he's had some playoff series where he's gone cool as well. So, like, the streakiness has been there at times in the playoffs. You know, 2019 Stanley Cup final, he had 1 goal. The Islanders series in 21, in the second round, I think he had 0 points in that series. So it's happened, but he's also, you know, even last year, he was good in that series. Like, he was not part of the problem. I think he had 7 points in that series against Florida. So we've seen him do it, and he steps up here. And 2 of the goals coming on the power play, fascinating how suddenly the Bruins power play is going, because we've both talked about it in podcast form. We didn't talk about it a ton last week, but they've split up these units, you know, for the first time in forever, at least a long, long time. Pastrnak and Marchand are on 2 different units, you know, and the last game of the regular season, it's the new Pastrnak unit with Shattenkirk at the point, Zacha, Heinen, and either, you know, Van Riemsdyk like when he was in, but now it's a maroon net front. That was the unit that got going, where you're like, okay, that unit has better movement. They scored in that Ottawa game. Now you get to game one of the playoffs, and it's the other new-look unit that scores twice, with the one with Marchand on it and McAvoy at the point, DeBrusque net front, and then Coyle and Danton Heinen to round – or no, sorry, Heinen's the other unit. Coyle and Morgan Geeky to round out this unit. And they score twice. So now it's like all this debate over what do you do with the power play and do you have to reunite McAvoy, Marchand, and Pastrnak at some point. And instead, it just looks like you have a 1A, 1B situation that's working where, hey, they're each going to get a minute, and it almost doesn't matter which one starts. You know, that game last night, early on, it was the Pastrnak unit was starting the power play. By the end of the game, it was the Marchand-McAvoy unit was getting the first minute. But all of a sudden, they're both working. They're both moving the puck, and Montgomery keeps talking about converging to the net instead of, you know, just staying out wide. And maybe it was just the wake-up call they needed. Maybe they might have done it on their own, knowing the playoffs are around the corner, but this is clearly working for the power play right now.
Yeah, and the other thing is the Maple Leafs penalty kill is the magic elixir for everybody's power play woes. Certainly the Bruins, because come playoff time, they cannot stop them. It's wild what those numbers look like. Just 18, 19, again, it's pointless to go back. It was pre-COVID. Like, it doesn't have any bearing, but it is amazing to rip off 40% again last night after struggling the way they have down the stretch. So, it was very evenly balanced. I like the fact that it saves McAvoy. He can play more 5-on-5 minutes by being on this second unit. Curious, and I hope, at least with the Leafs, you don't need to go back because it feels like it has a good rhythm.
Yeah, and the Bruins' power play, like we mentioned, was successful. Bruins' penalty kill looked good, even when they had Lindholm and Carlo in the box at the same time. At one point, you're like, okay, this is kind of like a very tricky situation when you have your two strongest penalty killers at this point in the box. But Razor, I'm curious if you had anything that you saw last night that you didn't like about the Bruins, and, you know, were there corrections that you saw possible for game two, or did they play a complete enough game where you're mostly just thinking, all right, that there was enough positives there. Everything else was just like minor.
No, I think they didn't even manage the puck much better still. The penalty at the end of the first period is completely because they're messing around with the puck at the blue line 4-on-4. There was two or three opportunities in the first period to get pucks out. They didn't. They got away with it, but they could have easily been down 2-1 in that first period because of not managing pucks properly. Don't try and make plays to the middle. Little bit of, again, Toronto's going to give you their opportunity. You're going to get opportunities. You don't have to force it. And I thought they did a little bit still, even in last night's game. Now, once it went to 4-0, it was just kind of on cruise control. But I thought in the first period they could have managed the puck even better, and especially at the blue line. So I think there's still a lot of, again, I have to know that Toronto's going to push back. If they don't, shame on me, but I just they're going to be better, and the Bruins have to up their level as well.
Were you surprised that really the only pushback that they had in game one was to start the third? They had a decent push, they scored the goal, but then, you know, you see another momentum shift, Bruins take it back. Were you surprised there wasn't more of a pushback and response in game one?
Oh yeah, absolutely. I can't believe how bad they played. I can't believe how bad they played. So I just don't. They have too many good high end talent that shouldn't happen again. But we'll see.
Yeah, and we talk about DeBrusque and his importance stepping up, all up and down the lineup for the Bruins. Like, you look at the importance of depth in the playoffs, and the Bruins get the first goal from their fourth line. You know, Maroon sets the tone physically really all night. Beecher. Jim Montgomery said, you know, played his best game as a pro, and I would have to agree with that. Like, not just the goal, but he made some good plays in the D zone to get pucks out. He was good in the penalty kill. Yeah, a couple good keep-ins with steals in the offensive zone. Like, he was all over the place. The third line, Lauko, Geeky, and Frederick, maybe the kind of the quieter line overall, at least in terms of chances. But Lauko and Frederick both had five hits, so they brought it physically. And then in the third period, Bridget, when you, what you're talking about, where the Maple Leafs are starting to make a push and they cut it to 4-1, it's that third line that ends up swinging the momentum back to the Bruins. Geeky throws a huge hit on Robertson on the forecheck, and then that sets up a minute-plus offensive zone possession for the Bruins, and eventually Lauko draws a penalty. Bruins go to the power play, and like that's pretty much the game at that point. So that even if like you know they weren't getting chances earlier in the game, that line steps up when it matters and has the energy in the third period.
Yeah, and I think it's safe to say that Montgomery made the right roster decision to not have Van Riemsdyk in instead of Beecher or Lauko, because I think that both Beecher and Lauko brought things to that game that were important, and they're faster. They're playing with a lot of intensity. After the fact, after seeing how it worked out, it feels like that was the right choice.
Certainly, and now it's on those two guys to every game you have to take a step up the ladder. Every game gets harder as these playoffs go. So the key, and I'll be watching very intently, is does Beecher have another gear? Does Lauko have another gear? Because they all stepped up. It's a great point that everybody brought up their level just a little bit. Marshy talked about it after the game. Everybody needs to bring the level up a little bit more. And now, again, the beauty of the playoffs is you have to match the other teams. The other team loses, they go up two rungs. So you have, and you're already one rung ahead, so you have to go up one rung just to stay even with them. Can you go up two rungs while they go up two rungs to be able to keep that edge? And that's what they've wanted out of Beecher all season long. That's what they've, you know, had him go down in the minors and work on that and finding that. And you hope that he's learned all of that and can process that and take it to another. Lauko played well in the playoffs, played his seven games last year. He's got to understand that he has to bring it to another level on Monday night. So they did a great job in game one. Let's see that those younger guys really carry it and do it again to another level on Monday night.
I think it was nice too to kind of have our question, or if there were any questions, answered about Maroon's health, right? Because he had that back surgery. He was out for more than like 2.5 months just about, and he had only played in two regular season games for the Bruins, and both of those, you know, were kind of like a slow reintroduction into playing, and then all of a sudden you come see him in game one and it's like, okay, he's not afraid to make these high impact hits. He seems to be playing completely the way that he's played in the past in playoffs, where he's physical, he's setting the tone, and I felt like we saw that his health is back to where it needs to be, and it answers a question that we had for the fourth line, which is, was he going to be able to be a regular in the lineup? And you already saw his importance in game one.
Yeah, for sure. And he's obviously done, and he's played 151 career playoff games, won three Stanley Cups. Like, he knows what it takes. He knows how you have to play in general this time of year, but specifically how he has to play. His game is relatively simple, so it's not like he's, you know, it's not Pastor not coming back where you're like, oh, there's so much of it's timing and feel for the puck and his hands and all that. Like, Maroon's pretty straightforward.
And he's playing with two guys that don't have playoff experience. Like, he's playing with guys that he's very verbal with on the bench. Like, he's able to kind of get those guys under the right mindset to handle the momentum shifts.
Yeah, and Montgomery highlighted that after the game. He said, like, Maroon does a great job on the bench, not just going over, like, what just happened, but getting his line ready for the next shift. Like, here's what we're going to go out and do. All right, we got a couple calls up, but we do have to take our last break here. So we'll be back right after this to wrap up Sunday Skate and a little look ahead to game two. Welcome back to Sunday Skate. I'm Scott McLaughlin with Andrew Raycroft and Bridget Prue. Let's go to Mark in Medford here, our last call on the board, final segment of Sunday Skate. What do you got, Mark?
Hey, how's it going? Hey, Razor, I got a question for you. The comment that Jim Montgomery made after the game last night about it's going to be hard to go away from Sway after the way he played last night. Was that just to get into Toronto's head? Because I believe they're sticking with the plan. And with that being said, if you watch the post-game show last night on TBS, even Henrik Lundqvist was asked a question about goalies and decisions made by coaches. And even he said that during the season, it's usually between just the coaches and the goalies. He says most of the time, the whole team doesn't know.
That is correct. Certainly, I would be very surprised if anybody other than the goalies know what's going on. And to be honest, players could care less. They don't, most of the time, they don't even know what goalie's in net for them. They'll just play the game. They have no idea who's in net. We kind of talked about the Monty comment. The beginning of it, I thought, oh, this is misdirection and Allmark's playing. And then when he brought Allmark up at the end of that comment, it kind of just made it more cloudy. So I don't disagree that I certainly agree in that there's a bunch of misdirection going on. We're going to hear a lot of it today. We're going to hear a ton of it today from both coaches, from both sides. So just enjoy it. Take it as entertainment. Make an opinion off of it, but don't hold these guys to it.
That's interesting. So I look at, like, the goalie rotation in the playoffs would be so unique that, like, I've wondered, you know, do guys on the team care about that? Like, talk about that? You think they just straight up, like, don't really care who the goalie is?
So, no, I don't think so, but I'll give you a story, a little bit of a story that I was told yesterday about way back in the day where one of the older guys was talking about he was on a team once and I swear this happened, and I didn't encourage this conversation last night because this, like, forms my, you know, argument better. Just, I got to preface that. I know we're running out of time. This player who used to play, won Stanley Cups, talked to me about the goalie we were talking about. And he's like, this happened one time where the coach came to me and asked me, who should we rotate? Because the GM wanted to rotate. The coach didn't really want to rotate, but he kind of had to listen to the GM. And the player said, absolutely not. We're not rotating. What are you talking about? We play the guy who wins games. So to that point, and this is, I wasn't going to bring it up, but it does to the question, to the players knowing, usually that doesn't happen. Usually the players aren't involved in that. The players don't want to be involved. They don't want to have that conversation. They just want to let the goalies do their thing.
Razor's on TV right now.
Yeah.
The classic.
My mom saw that the other day. She was very happy.
The classic Zamboni over the bridge.
It's back, yeah. So no, typically the players want nothing to do with it. And there's, I swear to God, there's guys that don't know who's actually in net. Like, they can't tell from the equipment and, you know, only see the names on the board.
I was going to say, like, I feel like you can't be asking the players their opinion. Like, I wouldn't even be asking Swayman or Allmark their opinion. Like, to me, that conversation is Montgomery, goalie coach Bob Asenza, Don Sweeney's probably involved to some level. And, like, outside of that, it's like they make the decision, then you go tell Allmark and Swayman this is the decision.
There's no democracy. It's dictatorship. That's the only way it works. If you're having conversations about opinions, then you've already lost everybody. Yeah. And that's as a player. Like, if a coach came to me and was like, hey, what do you think? Do you want to play? Like, I would have a heart attack and know that we're sunk. You need the guy to come and tell you what you're doing.
Yeah, and last year it felt like there was a degree of asking Allmark whether or not he was, you know, they're asking him, was he healthy enough to go? And most guys are going to say yes. So you got to make your own evaluation on stuff. I mean, obviously you want to, he knows his body best, but guys are just such competitors that you got to take most of the decision-making to
yourself.
Except
for Nylander.
So, jeez, I still can't believe that.
So along the same lines of trying to get into the players' minds. Okay. So Swayman just had a terrific game one. He also knows they've been rotating all season, right? He was on the wrong side of this last year where he was the guy who didn't get to play. If they go to Allmark in game two, what does Swayman think? Like, obviously he would rather start, but would he accept it, you know? Or, like, is he going to be upset if he has that game one and then game two goes to Allmark?
It's all about the communication and what the plan was, right? If and So that's it. Like we've gone over this a bunch. He's completely fine if he knows what was going on. But if he was told something was going to happen and then that got flipped after winning 5-1, then you have then you'll be a little annoyed. But there's really you're not allowed to be annoyed this time of year either. You're just not. Personal differences get put away at this time of year, so you got to just do it. But they've communicated. They have the plan. They've talked about it. So they know who's playing.
We didn't get to our Taylor Swift album review, so.
When did it come out?
Came out Friday.
Thursday at night at midnight.
I haven't heard much about it.
It's not good.
Is that why I haven't heard much about it? Okay.
I think there's
So it was peak Taylor Swift this summer. It's over, right?
Like, no, no.
It's going to start doing
it's
this.
It's still going
to be
huge.
A little bit.
No.
Well, no, it'll be huge, but I'm saying not to the same extent. Is that fair?
I couldn't get behind a lot of it, to be honest with you. Sometimes it grows on me after I listen to it.
Was there Travis Kelce stuff?
There's only one song.
It was it was other past exes.
It was very like sad girl music, and that's not my vibe.
So in addition to covering the Bruins, I'm also editor of WEI.com. Taylor Swift needs an editor. There's a good album. She released like two albums. There's a good album in there somewhere. There's just too much. Okay. It's too much.
There's 31 songs.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Really?
Yeah, it's crazy.
That's like the old Smashing Pumpkins. Now I'm really dating myself. Remember like, the double album, Smashing Pumpkins? That was like bananas.
Melancholy
and
Infinite Sadness.
Absolutely.
It just kind of felt like some of these songs were more for her than for us. It was like, just get it off your chest.
She's getting selfish.
I, you know what? I like Taylor Swift.
All right. Game two. What do we got? Game two. Who plays? How they play? What do we got? What is your prediction for game two?
Omar plays. Bruins win. Up 2-0.
Okay.
I think that I know I said I want Swayman, which is true. I do think they play Allmark because I think they already predetermined
it. And do they play well?
Yes.
Do the Leafs play better?
Oh, absolutely.
Leafs play better,
it's gonna
still
be like
lose.
It's like a 2-1 game instead.
Okay.
What do you think?
I agree. I think it's gonna be a little high scoring. I think we got like a 4-3 game. Bruins show adversity and find a way to win again.
Allmark, Swayman?
Swayman.
Swayman.
All right, we got, Fitzy and Lions coming up? Is that who's on next? And then Red Sox baseball later. The Celtics game won today. There's Panthers, Lightning, and Rangers. Four NHL games today. Just great, great day of sports. We'll be back next Sunday, 9 a.m. after game 4.
Correct.
We'll talk to you then.